The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Great to have you in Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, 80s action star, rocking his In-N-Out Burger t-shirt, Colton Stone. We'll play Guess What Colton's Wearing Later today when it comes to baseball hat. Busy show. Kranak, good morning, sir. What's new?
I got the yearbook in today.
Ooh.
The Hail Varsity yearbook. Just got it out of the mail.
Really?
I was thinking for the show today.
Keep
why
thinking.
Why don't we just read it? Let's just read it out loud.
Cover to cover.
Play some. Yeah,
Colton
can play some piano music for us or something.
Okay,
it's just an idea.
No, that's. I need to get my copy. Usually, several get sent to the station, and I pull a Goodfellas. I sell them out the back door at 50%. I'm kidding. I don't do that. But man, I'm excited for this yearbook. The work Brandon Vogel has done, Derek Peterson, Greg Smith, Jacob Padilla, Mr. Mike Babcock, 41 years of football amazingness. I mean, your college football Bible's here.
Mm-hmm.
It's in your mailbox.
I just got it. I wish I could comment on more of it.
Okay.
I can't. I can just comment on, okay, it's thick.
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of like a Sears Wish book back in the day.
I get it.
JCPenney catalog.
No, I hear you.
Maybe. It might be pushing it a little. Oh, but nice illustration of Frost on the front. Yeah, so, I mean, look, it's pretty thick. I think you could probably carry us for like two shows
okay.
if you just want to read it.
Okay. And next weekend is when it kind of gets real. July's here, leading up to Big Ten Media Days. Mm. But, you know, Nebraska is not sleeping during the dead period with another commit. We'll start there. We'll kind of get into some thoughts Coach Chenander shared with Gary Sharpland. Set up the show for you. We'll rewind this first half hour, and we'll hear from Phil Steele, college football insider, college football yearbook. Phil Steele has that out, and many of you have gotten that along with your Hail Varsity yearbooks for years. So we'll hear from Phil Steele coming up around 7:30. Our discussion with him. We go a deep dive into not just Nebraska, but the rest of the Big Ten. And there's so many new coaches. I mean, this coaching carousel year, not only with Coach Frost, but when you look at UCLA and A&M and Florida State and so many big programs yeah. out to try and find their national championship head coach, Phil spent some time on that. Brandon Vogel will be with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Brandon can read out loud with you, Kranak. From the Hail Varsity yearbook in hour two. And then Gary Sharp will be with us, the Iron Horse. Get his thoughts on some Nebraska football on his interview with Coach Chenander. And the heartbreak of one day Van Horn. Ugh. Kranak, you and I were just getting out of school when Van Horn took over and launched Nebraska baseball. We knew how great he was, and you saw it cap off with a couple of CWS trips. And then this week happens where Arkansas's been cruising through and a foul ball down the first base line detonates an amazing season. Credit to Oregon State. I heard from Coach Pat Casey last night. He texted me back finally, like I'm being insensitive. The guy just won another championship on the verge of elimination every game after their first game. And Pat Casey's been a good dude to the show for a number of years. Since his back-to-back championships in 05-06. So, listen, there was a pull of the heartstrings for Dave Van Horn to get it done locally here. Mm. He's such an incredible coach, and, man, that is going to leave a mark for a while, what could have been for Arkansas. But we'll get into some Nebraska baseball. I know you're in the thick of CWS coverage up there, being in Omaha, Kranak.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too where you think about with Van Horn, it's so funny how we can overanalyze things, you know, and criticize things, and there is a high degree of randomness to all sports, A ton. There is nothing that Dave Van Horn could have coached differently. There's nothing with his off-season training program or the way they practice or whatever that led to that ball dropping.
No, it's, do you make the play in the moment? Yes or no?
It just, you know, it dropped. Like, and if they caught it, they win the College World Series, basically. You know, but he didn't, so they don't. It's just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And I wonder if to that point, if it's easier for Van Horn in some ways, where he's just like, I don't know, man. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like he's looking out there where he saw his team just completely cave and commit 14 errors or,
sure,
you know, guys going up and, you know, they 20 strikeouts and they're just not prepared. It's just random. Like, that happens. That play happens all the time, right? It happens all the time. It's pretty routine for a couple guys to be looking at each other. Oh, I thought you were going to catch it. You know? But you feel for him. It's crazy that it comes down to that.
You just nailed it. There are just things that you've practiced and practiced and practiced, that being catching a fly ball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know.
Since you were four.
Yeah, but that was just miscommunication. Somebody else was getting it. Just, ugh, brutal.
Well, let's get into Jamie Nance. I watched a little bit of his film out to dinner last night. Get the alert that commit number 11 is in for Nebraska for 2019. You want to talk identity and what Nebraska football is all about under Scott Frost. It is going to be speed, speed, speed. And Nance, 6 foot, 160 pounder. When I look at kids on film, and this was his junior film, and a good story by Greg Smith on the commitment, MailVarsity.com, I'm trying to match up who he reminds me of, right? You see a kid on film, you see a body type, and you see what he can do with a huddle film. And I'm like, well, who does he remind me of? 6 foot, 160, so he's long. He has super long strides. And I swear to you, man, I'm watching 4 minutes of film, and the kid hasn't been touched. Literally. I mean, they'll either line him up on the outside, or they'll put him in the slot. And they'll run a go route, or they'll run an inside slant, or they'll run a jet sweep. And kudos to the kid's perimeter blocking, because he's just shifting, moving, feet moving, and then acceleration. And maybe somebody got a forearm on him along the sideline. But his 100-meter speed is 10.66. I mean, that's a flyer. That's the Frost fast that he's going after. Good hands and even better acceleration. So he kind of reminds me of just how Jamal Turner looked, but he's bigger, right? He's a much bigger version. His body reminds me of Marcus Mariota, but as a receiver. I mean, I'm making a mess right now, but that's my first impressions. 6 foot, 160, long strider, accelerator, and then he's got the wiggle and the shiftiness, so he's got it all there. And Nebraska made quite an impression. His recent visit, Friday Night Lights last week, and Nebraska really loves going after track athletes to play football. I really thought that Jamie Nance's Twitter post, when it comes to his decision, was super mature. Thanks, parents. Thanks, coaches. Thanks, family. Thanks, programs. Thanks, Nebraska. And it was a mother of all thank you letters. It was really pretty cool. And Nebraska gets him over Mississippi State, Baylor, Missouri, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, and TCU. And just think of some of the receivers, Kranak. You look at explosive offenses and just you blink and there's 50 points up there. And that's kind of my identity for the Big 12. With their wideouts.
Yeah.
And
of course,
just, you know, and Baylor had it rolling, or TCU has it going. They have dudes that can just get deep and catch it. Missouri's got fantastic athletes. And then two of the SEC schools, and two of the three SEC schools in this mix, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, they have big, long, lanky wideouts that can run as well. And then Brian Kelly's had a good run of pretty good sized wideouts as well. So it's a really good peer group Nebraska was able to stand out in front of.
You know, he is an interesting guy. I'm trying to figure out how to compare him also, and you can't really come up with too many Nebraska comparisons.
No, I mean,
Nebraska just doesn't have guys like him.
No, I'm saying shiftiness, though, is the Jamal Turner thing off? What's your take on that?
I don't see his shakes as that violent. You know what I mean? Jamal Turner had some crazy jukes.
Sure, sure, sure.
I don't see. I wonder. Now this is going to the Wayback Machine.
The way he glides.
Willie Amos. Whoa. Remember how Willie Amos ran?
I just remember Willie Amos doing like 18 minutes straight of jump rope and not sweating.
And he could sprint, man. That guy was. Yeah. You know, he was an absolute sprinter. I can see that maybe. But you're right. He does look good. I've just got through a couple of minutes of his highlights where you were talking there. And he didn't. He literally hasn't been touched. Now, that will obviously change. But Nebraska's getting, once he gets to college, of course. But it's a good sign that, you know, here's a guy that hasn't been touched in high school. So, you know, in college, he'll get touched a little. you know, not bad. It's going to be fun though, man. It's, you can't help but look ahead and just say, God, there's going to be a lot of new faces. God, there's a whole new football kind of style that we have to learn that we have to, you know, cause we've kind of been through the West Coast thing. So I think everybody kind of understood what that's all about and the pro style. You know, we saw a little bit, Pelini and Beck, they didn't really stick to any particular offense for long enough. You know, I thought they kind of moved and changed things often. But we have to kind of learn an entire new way of looking at the game. And it's going to be weird. It's going to be strange. It's going to, you know, when Frost comes out empty on, you know, third and goal from the five.
Are you going to be okay? Are you going to be all right?
Well, I think I'll be all right, but you know what I'm saying? Like you have to get used to that. It's different.
You're going to get up from your east balcony seat. You're going to hug your child and then you're going to pace. You're going to pace till those referees' arms go up on the goal line. If they go empty inside the five, third and goal.
It's going to happen.
No, I know it will.
You know what I mean?
But part of my excitement level is to just, I want a Kranak cam on you every third and short when it's empty and there's 17 wideouts spread out there.
I mean, you know what I'm saying.
And
it's a totally different thing.
And they'd go heavy in the old West Coast I formation, and it wouldn't matter because they'd lose a yard.
Like, I like sometimes. Everything about Frost and this whole thing.
I know you do.
Except
what you see.
Except
third and short.
Well, except that, and just like, I'm like, are you sure you're just gonna get rid of the fullback like forever?
Like, you're waving goodbye.
You're just punting the fullback into oblivion. They're No Kranak at all.
Just look at it this way. Life's about choices. And what's good here is you may have that empty set. You might have the old duck position motion in. So, yes, it'll be shotgun, but you'll have a possibility of an option, like a true old school option. Think about that. That'll make you happy this morning. Quarterback option keep to the end zone.
Sure. I wonder how Joel Makovica feels.
Oh, I've talked to Joel a lot.
Do you think like when him and Frost, like if they get together, Joel's sort of like, thanks, Scott. Thanks for just eliminating my position.
Joel Makovica is great, okay?
I know.
And Joel Makovica's standing with where he is as a Nebraska fullback is never going to be questioned. With the... We aren't going to say they're eliminated. We'll just say they're missing or they're in a timeout.
Thanks, Scott.
You have the the enhancement of back when they had fullbacks, this was one of the best. It can enhance the legend. Now, I wouldn't be surprised to have old Joel lob Coach Frost a phone call. Let's go play 18. If I beat you, we have to reinstitute fullbacks.
On third and goal from inside the five.
You could do it.
This walk-on time.
I think there needs to be a potential intervention planned, and that could be as simple as Makavica reaching out to Schlesinger, Schlesinger calling Jano, and Jano giving a heads up to Rathman. They can all four show up in front of Coach Frost's desk and just pull up a chair and have a discussion.
My son's five, Chris. He's
who am I missing? Who am I missing from the fullback?
You got a lot of them there. Nobody jumps out.
My favorite was Sam Schmidt for obvious reasons back in the late 80s.
Can we go with, of course. I mean, you can throw in Judd Davies, Willie Miller.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys to throw in.
Brian Carpenter.
Yeah. Tim Carpenter. No, that was a tight end.
Yeah, Tim's a tight end.
Yeah. So my kid's five. Mm-hmm. And I just know that, you know, he's going to grow up. He's probably just now this year going to start really getting into being able to watch a quarter of a football game at least. Mm-hmm. Right. At some point in a few years, he's going to be like, Dad, what's a fullback? Like our kids, our youth are growing up. They don't even know. They're not even going to know. And how are you going to explain it to the kids?
You know what you're going to be able to
do? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
You know what you're going to be able to do?
What?
Because a lot of kids right now, even Colton's age, are growing up asking, what's a conference title? So
what?
Skip the fullback and
what's
show,
it like
and,
to
and
sh- win
show them
something of
a
significance.
Cranek, you're opening a can of worms with a lost generation here.
All right, if we have to trade fullback for titles, I can get with that. Okay. But that's sort of the promise.
Sure.
I mean, that's basically what Frost is saying as he walks in the door. Like, look. Going to get rid of this fullback.
One more thing here on Jamie Nance.
Huh.
The fit offensively. I mean, you look at the plays that were run in the highlight package from Huddle.
Yeah.
Looks a lot like Central Florida, you know? I mean,
it does.
It's no accident, obvious take, but just the fit is good. And, yeah, I mean, let's brainstorm who Jamie Nance reminds us of. I mean, and I just, from an explosive...
Not a fullback.
No, not a fullback. Jamie Nance can also return some punts. He did that. Can tap the line this morning. You want to join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com, Mark at HaleVarsity.com, or find us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio, at Mark Skurs. You want to pimp Colton a little bit about his In-N-Out Burger t-shirt, go ahead at Two Birds, One Stone. That is what's going on this morning here on the weekend edition. And commit number 11, Jamie Nance, for 2019. So last thought here before Phil Steele joins us. How are you going to come to grips if you get that question with Junior about, you know, what's a fullback?
Dad, what's a fullback?
You've played this through in your mind, yes or no? How you're going to explain it?
Well, son, it's kind of Nebraska's identity, or it was.
Mm-hmm.
What's an identity? Oh, God. Let's go talk to your mom. That'll be a short conversation now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah,
won't be a big deal. No, but it's It's a whole new thing to get used to.
It's gonna be okay.
Well, and here's what else is interesting is Nebraska is about to run its version. The subtleties are gonna be interesting to figure out. The offense that Frost is running is basically like the football offense right now.
Mm-hmm.
High schools all over the place are running it.
Large
colleges all over the place are running
it.
Yep. It's the offense. That's what everybody's running. So how is this one gonna be different? Better.
I can tell you.
Figuring out those subtleties.
I can tell you. Two things. One, everyone's going to run hurry up, right? But is everybody going to be as conditioned to run hurry up? Okay. So Nebraska will go at that blur pacing when they get comfortable with it. And Nebraska's guys will have to be in that much better shape. Both sides of the ball, right? So they're going to be a better conditioned team, theoretically, than the other team that's running hurry up or tempo in a spread. Two, the blend of physicality with the spread, right? Can it be done? Yes, it can, and I think that's the tweak and the difference, the adjustment to the Oregon recipe that Frost is going to make. He's going to have tough football players. He's going to have tough lines of scrimmage, and he's going to make sure the offensive and defensive line don't get pushed around. That's been not the case from time to time the past few years.
What you're describing is just a good football team, Chris. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm,
so that's basically what you're saying.
I'm explaining to you how you asked how the spread there this spread will be different, and I said they'll go faster and be better in better shape, and they're going to be tougher than
and
you.
Bigger and better. So they're just going to do it better.
Yep.
You think that too?
I believe that.
I do too, actually. But that'll be cool to watch those subtleties too and figure out why and how it's different. Because I got to be honest, sometimes that offense is kind of frustrating and boring to watch. I'm not talking about Frost offense in particular. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about that style of offense. Zone read, zone read, zone read.
Well, you're waiting for that big play to pop though.
Yeah. You're like,
And it can. So,
yeah.
Now you've got options, man. You've got options with it, with the RPO. I think that'll be fun. You got options when you go to Madonna Proactive. What pool do you want to get in? Do you want to swim laps with the indoor? Do you want to sit by the sun in the outdoor pool, the resort area? Do you want to do some laps against a monster current inside with Madonna Proactive's three pools? And they also have a yoga studio. They also have 130 classes offered each week included in your membership. TRX studio, spinning studio, a walking track, that aqua track I told you about where you're going against the current. Still time for you to get on board with Madonna Proactive. 56th and Pine Lake in Lincoln. Can log on today, madonnaproactive.org. Schedule your tour today. Maybe you're trying to get that summer bod in summer bod 4. Maybe you're just trying to kind of tweak it a little bit. 402-420-0000. A slew of basketball courts to beat your child one-on-one. And also pickleball has been brought to the table. That is a lot of fun. And I tell you, Madonna Proactive, incredible facility. And when it comes to strength training, free weights, two floors, free weights and the hammer strength machines. So much cardio equipment, it is impossible not to feel better, look better, and get in shape. Madonna Proactive can help you do that. 402-420-0000, 56th and Pine Lake. Stop by Madonna Proactive today. A quick timeout on the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. And the rewind is next. Phil Steele, college football preview. It's the Big Ten, Nebraska. And what's going to happen with some of those national programs that have new head coaches. This is Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
Back with you at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. He is all about college football, the best. Phil Steele with his college football preview 2018 on newsstands. Can log on philsteele.com. Phil, how are you, sir?
You know, I am doing great, Chris. How about yourself?
Doing outstanding. Excited for year one of the Scott Frost era. Let's start off with Coach Frost. If you can, what were some things from an analytical standpoint that jumped out to you about his team at Central Florida?
I would say the improvement factor. Now, keep in mind, Central Florida was not your typical winless football team that he inherited. They were a team that, the previous 3 years had won 10, 12, and 9 games and even had a Fiesta Bowl victory under their belt. It said everything that could go wrong went wrong. But what I really liked was the improvement on defense right out of the box by about 100 yards per game. And then, of course, the improvement on offense. And, last year, you look at their offense, they had a nice mix, 54 run, 46 pass, and were highly productive with the point total. So 48 points per game, you can't argue with that. It was just overall very solid improvement from day one all the way through the final game, which was probably their best game.
It was. Phil Steele's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Let's apply what you know about Coach Frost at Central Florida to Nebraska. Phil, what's your outlook for year one with Nebraska and Coach Frost?
Well, I put Nebraska on my most improved list this year. They're my number seven most improved team, which means I definitely think they're making a bowl. I know for Nebraska fans, they're used to coming into the season thinking we should be a contender in the West, you know, a double-digit win season. But I'm going to say that this year will be a solid year of improvement and those expectations to go to next year. And it's probably due to the schedule. When I look at Nebraska this year, let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Last year, at times, they were a little confused with the Diaco defense. It was a little complex. Gave up an amazing 5.6 yards per carry. I mean, you're not going to win very many games when you're giving up almost 6 yards a carry. 436 yards on the year, 36 points per game. Now, they've got 8 starters back on defense. No big stars. In fact, none of the units rank in my top units in the front of the magazine, but I look for significant improvement on the defensive side of the ball under Chenander's system. In his first year at Central Florida, they went from allowing 37.7 points per game down to 24.6. And I thought at times last year the defense was okay, and I think they've got some talent. Dedrick Young at linebacker, Stoltenberg at nose tackle, and some decent players in the secondary. Offensively, it's going to be good to get away from that passing offense. We've had two runs with the passing offense at Nebraska, one with the Bill Callahan era and now with the Mike Riley era. Last year, they threw the ball. They had a 44-56 mix last year, 56% passes, and I look for them to get back to running more spread option. Adrian Martinez is a dynamic runner at the quarterback position. They're very deep in the backfield, 5 deep at running back. And I've got 2 of the best receivers in the Big Ten, and Spielman and Morgan. And the offensive line looks pretty good. They've got 3 or 4 starters back up front. And the key is going to be how quickly they adapt to the changing blocking schemes. Now, when you factor in the schedule this year, that's where it gets a little touchy. They have to play Michigan on the road, Wisconsin on the road, Northwestern on the road, Ohio State on the road, Iowa in Kinnick Stadium, where they've been outstanding the last couple years, and then hosting Michigan State. I could see Nebraska an underdog in 6 games this year, but I still think they get to a bowl game, and it wouldn't surprise me if they pull an upset or two in Frost's first year.
Phil Steele with us, breaking it down. College football preview 2018 with Phil Steele on newsstands. Can also order it to digitally, philsteele.com, at philsteele042 on Twitter is where you follow Phil. Let's spend one more second here on Nebraska. You mentioned the adaptation to this new scheme and Adrian Martinez. We have a small glimpse of Adrian in the spring game, but what makes this Frost offense tick is what a quarterback can do with his legs on top of being extremely efficient with his arm. And I know he's just a freshman, but he looks and sounds and acts the part like he could be a really good young player.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the good thing is, if he was a redshirt freshman, he wouldn't be the quarterback specifically recruited for this system. And keep in mind, he missed his entire senior year of high school with a torn labrum and his throwing shoulder. But he's one of those gym rats. He went in, looked at everything on tape, and really he's a guy that has got the composure. He doesn't seem like an 18-year-old. He seems more like a junior or a senior. And while the passing, you know, he doesn't quite have the throw on the ball that you'd like to have at this point because of last year's surgery, he is getting more accurate, and boy, can he hurt you with his legs. So I think he's a perfect fit for the offense.
Phil, let's talk the rest of the Big Ten. Is Ohio State still your team to beat, or is Wisconsin right there? Is Wisconsin the team that can dethrone Ohio State?
I think there are 5 legitimate national title contenders in the Big Ten, and that's what makes the Big Ten one of the best conferences in college football. In fact, you know, for years, Chris, when I put out my toughest conference article in the magazine, you could have entitled it, "Who's the second toughest conference next to the SEC?" But now, over the last 2 years, the SEC has been caught by the ACC, and last year, I actually graded the Big Ten the toughest conference in all of college football. And look at this year. Out of the Big Ten East, which is the toughest division in college football, there are 4 legitimate contenders. Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State. You know, Michigan and Michigan State are 2 teams that were number 128, number 129 on my experience chart. Now, both are loaded with experience. Almost everybody back, like 19 returning starters for Michigan State, 18 for Michigan. And Michigan might have got the piece that they were missing in a quarterback, Shea Patterson. So both are definite threats. Penn State's a threat, and they've got Trace McSorley back at QB. They play a grand total. We talked about Nebraska's schedule. Penn State plays one team on the road that had a winning record last year. So that's a contrast to completely different for Nebraska's schedule. And then there's Ohio State. I think Haskins steps in, gives them a better downfield passing threat than what they had with Barrett. They've got two dynamic running backs in Dobbins and Weber. The receiving core looks to be the best I've seen recently. Offensive line solid. Nick Bosa leads an outstanding defense. And the two teams they play on the road, Michigan State and Penn State, they had over 1,000 yards against the two combined last year and allowed under 500. I do have Ohio State winning the East, and I've got them matched up against Wisconsin. But I'll mention this about Wisconsin. As much as I love this team, they've got a great defense. They've got the best offensive line in the country. They've got Jonathan Taylor, a running back, and Alex Hornibrook, a QB. Remember last year, en route to that undefeated season, their road games were against BYU, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota. Not a single one of those five teams had a winning record last year. This year, their five road games: Iowa in Kinnick Stadium, Michigan, Northwestern, Penn State, and Purdue, five bowl teams on the road, and three of them national title contenders. So a much tougher schedule for Wisconsin this year. But I could make a case. If you told me right now, go on any of the five, I'll make a great case for them winning the Big Ten.
No, Wisconsin's tremendous. You mentioned their lines of scrimmage and what they have in the backfield. Let's talk Michigan, Michigan State. I know there was a lot of close wins by Sparty last year. Loarkey was really nice. I'm intrigued about Shea Patterson in Michigan. Who ends up having the better year, Sparty or Michigan?
You know, I'm going to go with Michigan despite the fact they play the tougher schedule. And like you touched on, Chris, is that Michigan State last year, a little fortunate in some of their games, maybe not quite as good as their record. Whereas in Michigan's case, they were probably a little unfortunate in a couple of games. It may have been better than their 8-5 record. And last year, Michigan had a grand total of one returning starter on defense, yet they allowed just 271 yards per game. This year, nine starters back on defense. Best secondary in the country. Linebackers, number 12. Defensive line, number 6. Offensively, I think the offensive line's improved enough. They've got a bevy of running backs. And their receiving core, you know, last year they brought in two true freshmen, Donovan Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black. Those two guys, Black got injured. Peoples-Jones had a good but not great year. I think they'll both really emerge this year. They've got the tight ends. And then Shea Patterson, I think they're going to make him fit perfectly into the offense, and he's got a good surrounding cast. Now, they have to play Notre Dame, Northwestern, Michigan State, and Ohio State all on the road, but this is a very dangerous Michigan team, one that I rate number 6 in my power poll.
I think their defense is going to be great, and Patterson, Harbaugh's no stranger to using athletic quarterbacks like he did with Kaepernick. I think he can make Patterson fit well in that offense. We'll just see how the Michigan O-line performs. That's been an issue with them. A few more minutes, Phil Steele with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Phil, a thought here on Iowa. What's your projection for the Hawkeyes?
You know, Iowa's got the best shot at Wisconsin in the West this year, and a lot of it has to do with the schedule. I don't think talent-wise they're completely up with Wisconsin, but at Kinnick Stadium, can we talk more about that? I mean, 2 years ago, they knocked off number 2 Michigan late in the year, 14-13. Last year, Penn State came rolling in number 4, needed a touchdown pass on 4th down on the final play of the game to pull out a 2-point win, and then I'm still scratching my head over 55-24. I just can't explain that blowout win over Ohio State like that. So we know Kinnick Stadium is dangerous. They get Wisconsin at home. They get Northwestern at home. They get Nebraska at home. And their road games look like Wisconsin's did last year. Talking about Minnesota, Indiana, I think Purdue is in a little bit of a rebuilding mode this year on the defense. Illinois, and they play one team on the road with the winning record in Penn State. But if they knock off Wisconsin September 22nd, they can afford a loss at Penn State and still win the West. So if anybody's going to knock off Wisconsin, I didn't call for it, it would be the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Phil, year one debut for Chip Kelly at UCLA. How's that going to shake out?
I'm thinking it's a rebuilding year. You know, Chip had some great advantages at Oregon. Number one, he was one of the front runners for the spread offense and the hurry up, and he also had tremendous facility advantages. Here at UCLA, you know, they've got good facilities, but you look at the overall talent, they're number 118 on my experience chart. They're going through a coaching change, changes on the offense, changes on the defense. Coach has to learn new players. Players have to learn new systems. I think it's a rebuilding year for UCLA. A lot of folks are expecting him to step right in and put that Chip Kelly magic out there, but I think that if they get to a bowl game, they'll be fortunate.
Dan Mullen at Florida, what happens in Gainesville?
best coaching situation for any first-year head coach right there. My number one most improved team last year was Notre Dame. They went from 4 wins to 10. Florida had 4 wins last year. It wouldn't surprise me if they got that high this year. Last year, everything that could go wrong went wrong for Florida. 10 suspended players in August, including their top rusher, top receiver. Injuries, by the end of the season, they were down 28 scholarship players. And then this year, Dan Mullen inherits 19 returning starters, and that doesn't even include a player like Jordan Scarlett, who was their number one rusher in 16, but was suspended last year. So they're even more experience than that. He's a quarterback whisperer. I think he gets the most out of Felipe Franks. And then he always gets the most out of his talent. I look for Florida to be the most improved team in the country this year, and he steps into the best situation of any first-year head coach.
How about Jimbo at A&M? That's a great contract.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, with Jimbo, got to talk to him in length going over the team with him. He likes what he's inherited here. And, in fact, if you go in the front of the magazine, Chris, they're one of only 9 teams that rank in my top units in all 8 position categories, including my number 16 special teams. He likes both QBs. I think it'll be Starkle. He's got Travion Williams back at running back, some dangerous receivers. Their offensive line, I rate number 26 in the country, defensive line 25. It's really a complete team. The thing I don't like about them, it's a Nebraska type of schedule. I mean, they play Clemson and Alabama in the first 4 games. They have to play South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Auburn in Jordan-Hare. All 3 of those games on the road. So that's a pretty tough schedule for the Aggies this year. But I think he's going to do extremely well there.
You had a thought on Joe Burrow. Has a Nebraska connection, grad transfer. LSU's needed the quarterback for a long time. Can he elevate the Tigers?
I think it's a good situation for him to go and start. I think he's going to give them their best quarterback play they've had in years. My question marks with LSU is experience level, which is number 129 in the country, and schedule. They have to play Miami of Florida and Arlington, Auburn and Jordan-Hare, Florida, Texas A&M, all on the road, and they host Georgia and Alabama. They're probably going to be an underdog in 6 games this year. I think Burrow can maybe get them up to 8, which would be a good accomplishment there, and I think he's going to be a good fit for that offense.
Can Georgia reload?
They should. You know, they go from 10 returning starters to 5 on defense. They lose their top 2 running backs in Chubb and Michelle, but they look to be pretty close to last year's standards. And, Chris, I've actually got them favored in all 12 games this year, so we might see 12-0 Alabama against 12-0 Georgia in that SEC title game.
You know what? That was a fun ball game, though, in the title game. Phil Steele with us, Sail Varsity Radio. PhilSteele.com, at Phil Steele. 042 on Twitter. Before we go, I need a surprise team for 2018, and I need a team that has expectations but will fall off this season.
For a surprise team this year, I'm going to go with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And when you look at Notre Dame, they're a team that nobody's talking about. They're not in the top 10. They're not considered a national title contender. But they remember at one point last year, they got as high as number 3 in the country.
Yeah.
They've got 9 starters back on defense. The offensive line, despite losing a couple of first-round draft picks, looks solid. Brandon Winbush looks solid. And then you take a look at the schedule this year for Notre Dame. Now, it's not easy. Their road games are against Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Northwestern, and USC. None of those are easy, but all of them fall into the winnable category, so I like that. And the second thing is they get their toughest games of the season, Michigan, Stanford, and Florida State, all at home. So add it all up, I think Notre Dame is my number one surprise team in the country, or a non-top 10 team that I think can actually contend for a playoff spot. And a team for a drop-off this year, probably going to go with UCF. You know, UCF is a team that I think they'll still have a good season, but last year was an unbeaten season. And this year they go from the hunter to the hunt dead. And that's a different type of animal. They've got some toss-up games early. They have to play North Carolina on the road. They have to play Memphis on the road, USF on the road. I see them dropping from the and they'll probably be ranked at the start of the year. I don't know if they're going to be ranked at the end of the year.
Phil, always appreciate it. We love catching up and talking college football with you. Phil Steele with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Phil, take care and best to you.
Sounds great, Chris. Always enjoy our football conversations, my friend.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Back in Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Mark Kranak started the show off discussing and describing and throw the idea out there to read the Hail Varsity yearbook that's in his hands for the next 2 hours.
It can last us through July.
It could, but if you don't have one, you can still subscribe and get one. You can also bundle and get the hookup with the premium content on HailVarsity.com. Real easy. Bundle up. HailVarsity.com/subscribe or 8553-HUSKER. That's what you dial in and get the yearbook, get the 10 issues, and get the premium content. It's a winner. Kranach, 30 years ago today, what was released?
Ooh, give me a hint. Are you talking music, movies?
Movie.
Shows?
It's a movie.
30 years ago today, it's a 1988.
One of the best lines ever in a barber shop. Is that velvet?
Is that coming to America?
Yes, yes, you got it.
Yes.
Randy Watson.
McDowell's.
Yes, sexual chocolate.
Good old McDowell's. Oh, man, there's a whole lot in there.
That was hilarious.
Soul Glow.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
They'll
bark like a dog. There's so much. There's so much in that.
That was good. The barbershop scene. I mean, that's straight up sports talk.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, Rocky Marciano.
Lewis.
The one, yeah. He beat Joe Lewis's. Yeah.
How about good. That? 30 years ago. 30. I feel old.
No, it's on Facebook, and I'm like, yeah, watching a little footage. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You could do a whole ream of performance drops by Randy Watson.
Good. Feeling like a dinosaur.
Good and terrible.
We're talking about coming to America.
Well, I just thought it was apropos with fullbacks. I mean, the way you're like,
I know.
Where's the fullback?
You know, this second hour, Chris, we are going to turn the page and look to the future. You want to do that?
Yeah, very quickly. Uh-huh. Very quickly. It'll be tempo. Brandon Vogel's 10 minutes away. HailVarsity.com and magazine. We love talking with Brandon Vogel.
We'll talk about modern music and modern movies.
Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse.
Maybe the show Modern Family.
He caught up with Eric Shenander, defensive coordinator, and also was part of the College World Series broadcast with Westwood One. And, he was play-by-play guy with Nebraska baseball with Coach Van Horn, so a lot to get to with Sharpie. Come on back. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hour 2, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranach.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Great to be back with you. Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery Weekend Edition. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranach, Colton Stone, Gary Sharp coming up. And it is time to kick off Hour 2 with Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm glad to hear Gary's back. I was just filling out my application for the Iron Horse title in the last couple of weeks. But
he was in last week.
I'll just trash that.
I think he was in last week. I was not in. Where was I last week?
Yeah, you were off not doing your job, Chris. That's what you were doing.
It's been a full six days this week. I don't know what the hell to do with myself.
Yeah.
So, see, I was a week late. So, if Gary was off doing CWS stuff last week and Chris was not here to tell us no, great, I could have just given me that title and, you know, you'd have to come back today and just accept it.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Oh, you're the steel horse.
Yes.
And on the steel horse
I ride. Uh-huh, yes.
There we go.
Okay, Kranach was going to read the yearbook out loud for the last 2 hours. We decided not to do that.
I don't know why not. I mean, for July.
Okay, Vogues, how many offers has Kranach had, in your opinion, to do voiceover work or to do the audiobook type thing?
Well, at least one. I secured his... I secured first right of refusal for Dream Like Champion last year.
Oh,
unfortunately, we just haven't had any offers. So
that hurts my feelings, but that's fine. That's fine. Hey, you had a really awesome week of content per usual with Hot Reads and the stories. what I want to focus on here is earlier in the week, you know, what's it going to take to be better than 6-6? And you did a great job of outlining defensive improvement in quarterback play. And, folks, I want to go back to Coach Ginander. I mean, his defense jumped 82 spots from what he inherited. How do you think he got that done?
Well, that's sort of the unanswerable question, because if you could do that every time, you might be a miracle worker, because jumps like that don't happen very often. You usually see so UCF's defense in 2015 was, you know, statistically like sharing ranking space with Nebraska's 2017 unit. Their turnovers, you know, went up. Sort of all of the kind of negative plays, you know, talking about negative plays for an offense, stats that we hear Ginander and Nogue talk about, so tackles for loss, sacks, they were really good at sort of creating that havoc right away in year one. And it really carried UCF more so than the offense did that first year. When you look at – it's kind of interesting when you look at Nebraska going into 2018, just experience-wise, the defense has the edge there, I think. They don't have the sort of Stanley Morgan Jr. type immediate playmakers you can point to and say, well, that's the guy on that side. So it'll be interesting. Part of me thinks Nebraska could be kind of – defense led again in 2018 as the offense kind of finds its footing, just based on the experience level and kind of how it went at UCF. Not that that's the Bible for how it's going to go at Nebraska, but it's certainly interesting to look at.
You know, it's funny you bring up defensive playmakers, and we don't even really know who those guys would be because of the scheme they were in last year. Pretty much de-emphasized playmaking, right? It was just keep everything in front.
It's very harsh.
Well, no, it's true. It's not, and that, I don't even think it's a criticism. Like, it just honestly de-emphasizes.
Be safe, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, keep everything in front type thing. So if we have to guess, then who are some candidates that you think have that playmaking ability that we just flat out haven't seen because of, you know, the scheme they were playing in?
Yeah, it's. I think you're right, and that's a good way to put it. It was sort of de-emphasized, and it's not wrong. It's just a different sort of theory. So I think there's some value in kind of going that direction from, okay, be in the right spot. If you trust me, this is going to work, to, hey, man, you're a good football player. Go out there and make plays. You know, that feels pretty freeing for all of those guys. I look at the defensive line as probably the most likely emergent playmaker group. I like a lot of Nebraska's players there. There's not one right now that you identify and say, oh, well, opposing offensive lines are going to have to deal with him. And I think the Davis twins are probably the two of the main group there who have the highest ceiling still and are the closest to reaching that. I like DeAndre Thomas, some of the younger guys there too. So I think somebody's going to come out of it on the defensive line at the end of the year where we're going to say, oh, yeah, you wouldn't have expected that level of production, but one of those guys got it. But it's still hard to come up with just the one guy. At the linebacker group, you know, I think Luke Gifford's in for a big year. I think a lot of people think that. I'm also interested to see, you know, he might be second on the depth chart, but Muhammad Berry always says the right and interesting things. He's very good on that front. I'm excited to see sort of what he looks like on the field with this sort of new staff.
Second on the depth chart. Sorry, Chris.
No, you're good.
Really? You think it's a Honus and Dedrick Young show?
I think the start it is. And you know, a lot can change between the last time we saw those guys and in August and then even September getting around here. But if I had to guess today, yeah, I think those are your two inside linebackers.
What's needed from Mick Stoltenberg? I mean, he's a senior. He's been through ups and downs. He's battled. And he's got to anchor that interior.
He does. You know, there'll be more, I guess, multiple probably under Ginander maybe. But the defensive tackle's job in this defense at UCF, and this is kind of true for all defensive tackles, it isn't really a glamour position. It's part of what made Stu's 2009 so remarkable is that he made it that way. That's very atypical. So, you know, it's sort of eat up blocks, you know, control two gaps often, be where you need to be, and do the dirty work. And, you know, I think that's something that Mick Stoltenberg's able to do, something that kind of suits his personality as a team first guy. So all of that checks off. He had to make a pretty big physical change last year to even be able to fill that spot. So not being around or being injured during the spring didn't help, but I think it'll be a little bit better on that front in 2018.
Let's stick with the defensive line. Is it too myopic? Is it too, I don't know, is it drinking the Kool-Aid too much to look across and say, you know what, I can see like 9 guys playing this year. 9 or 10. I mean, do you see that many playing?
Yeah, I do. Like I said, it's a really interesting group. It's not the group where you have the greatest need defensively. That's, I think, pretty clearly the secondary in terms of the experience you have. The defensive line, we just don't know enough yet, but you look at sort of, you come up with your 2 deep, maybe add 1 or 2 more, and you're like, okay, this is interesting. You've got some different guys in there. You've got a Mick Stoltenberg. You've got Damian Daniels, you know, a guy who looks like that prototypical nose tackle, but is young, but seems to be making his way up the depth chart. Mentioned the Davis twins already. Freedom Akinbolanden looks like you want a defensive end to look. Just kind of waiting to see consistent production out of him. So you've got a bunch of those guys on the defensive line where you're like, okay, this looks like it could go a pretty good way. It just hasn't happened yet for some of those guys to the extent I think, you know, most people want to see, including those players themselves.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Go ahead, Kranek. Did you have a follow-up? My bad.
Yeah, I did. Sorry, Chris. I keep cutting you off. I'll buy you something after the show.
buy me a fullback.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's when we're talking about the defensive line, I don't know if you've looked into this a ton, if it's true, you know, but I think the general thought is, or historically the general thought has always been, for the most part, linemen, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, they don't start coming to their own until later on in their career, as opposed to receiver, running back, where you can kind of step on the field immediately and contribute. Is that part of it too, maybe why we're bullish on the defensive line? Because you just named off so many guys that are finally juniors or redshirt juniors. I mean, they're just physically more mature. Nebraska has a ton of those dudes.
Yeah, I think that is still the sort of perception out there, and maybe even a little bit more so on the offensive line than defensive line. You know, you look at the Ohio States and Clemsons of the world; they don't have a problem with getting young defensive linemen on the field, and they end up pretty good pretty quickly. But you know, that's still sort of the most competitive, I think, position to recruit is defensive line, and there's just not a ton of those immediate impact guys out there. So I do think that's part of it. You know, we've been talking about Freedom for a long time now as a Husker defensive lineman. It feels like we've been talking about the Davis twins for a long time, and that they're just getting to their junior year. So I think that there is something to consider there that, okay, it's, you know, it's reasonable to expect a growth phase, based on where those guys are getting to in their career. And that's the majority of your primary contributors on the defensive line. That growth phase probably needs to be tapering off into just the career phase, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Well, you nailed it, Vogues. You look at some of the premier places that have defensive line reputations, and Clemson and Auburn, and those guys that play, a lot of them have started as redshirt freshmen, which means the development phase is that redshirt season. And they get ready to be good enough to not only contribute, but at times dominate. And Nebraska's got so many options on the defensive line, but they haven't had a guy in a while be great early. You know what I mean? So if that next step can be taken, That would boost some things as well. From an offensive line standpoint, that's always kind of been Nebraska's formula, is to nurture, grow, water, get guys bigger, stronger, get the reps down, and then the plug and play kind of happens. I want to talk about the speed of Nebraska. That is going to be a major ingredient in the identity, and it's what Nebraska wants. That speed application to the Big Ten, the theory being you can't hit what you can't catch. Right now, if you're the Big Ten and you see what Nebraska is accumulating and already has, how do you think it transitions? How do you think Nebraska's speed is reacted to in the league this first season?
I think it'll take a little bit for opposing teams to fully kind of notice the Scott Frost difference. I mean, you know, everyone wants to recruit fast players. A few that I've seen, you know, a few coaching staffs really put an emphasis on it as much as this one does at Nebraska. So, you know, I'm sure there's makes me think of the Athlon Anonymous coach quotes, which are always delightfully catty between, you know, an assistant at Indiana talking about, you know, Maryland's offensive line or whatever it is. So I imagine if you got one of those guys in the room, got it, and asked them that very question, you'd probably get a little bit of that. But I think for the people who were willing to be honest and really open about it, and they can still be absolutely confident in their scheme. You look at that sort of Oregon offense, what it did when Frost was there, under Chip Kelly and then under Helfrich, and then how it translated to UCF. And I think you have to sort of think that, yeah, this could be a problem here in another year or two, specifically on the speed front. You know, I don't know if that part worries coaches that much. Like I said, everybody wants to be there and has some confidence in their guys. But, you know, you have to consider Nebraska in a way that I don't think you had to do in the recent past, as, oh, they have something here that can be, that has proven to be a real advantage when it gets up and running.
Real quick, too, you know, kind of a matchup that was really cool at the time, but I think back to now as sort of a preview, was, remember D'Antonio's really awesome Sparty team that went out to Oregon? Was that 14? Was that the team that won the Big Ten championship and won the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
Right. Their only loss, I believe, that year was at Oregon. And they were kind of beating the hell out of Oregon for a little bit, and then you blink, and Mariota and company have 42 put up on the no-fly zone. And it didn't start off great, but then it was a monster avalanche of just big play after big play. And that Spartan defense had no answer. And then the Oregon defense shut down the offense, and I think it ended up being like a 42-28 type ball game. 2-touchdown win. I mean, a pretty big-time statement for the Pac-12. Probably, quite frankly, the last big non-conference game they've won. And that's something that moving forward, that you'll, when it's working and when it's rolling, you can have some really good talent, some really good defenses, but ultimately that speed and tempo can break even the best defenses.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but just kind of thinking about it now, just as a general college football fan, like how fun is it to watch an offense that's capable of that? You know, to have that feeling like you're never that far away. You know, you're maybe one key turnover and mm-hmm. one good break away from a 28-point quarter at any moment. And you know, vintage. Yeah, the vintage. You know, considering Nebraska averaged what, I think 24 per game.
Game right. 2017, yes.
Yeah, it is a lot. You know, and vintage Nebraska was sort of that way, but in a different era, with sort of different optics. But you know, you think of all those games that were kind of close at halftime, and everyone just had the belief that, well, the offense is working. It's wearing the opposing team down, and you get ready for about 20 to 24 points here in the third quarter, and this thing will be a laugher by the end of it. That happens in different ways now. It happens a little bit more quickly with the sort of spread offense era, but it's still pretty fun to watch.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Okay, I know we're talking offense here. let's switch to defense, or will we? With a guy in particular, Moses Bryant. I just rewatched his film. You know, the kid out of Elkhorn South that's a, quote, walk-on. what? Look, that kid is not a walk-on, ability-wise. Whatever image the term walk-on conjures up, delete it when you're talking about him. Where do you think he does he go to the offense? Does he go to the defensive side? And do you think, like I think, if he goes to the defensive side, I think he plays and maybe even starts this year?
I don't know if I'm ready to go that far. I mean, I could see him fitting on either side. I almost think, like, his long-term, with his athleticism, it might be better for him on the defensive side. I almost think his likelihood of playing quickly is greater if he were to stick in the offensive backfield. Nebraska has plenty of options there. We know that. One of them still trying to get here for the 2019 or the 2018 class. But you look at, so who's the Adrian Killens type, the just burner, the home run hitter, you know, Greg Bell could do some of those things. I don't know if that's totally who he is at his core. So if Moses Bryant could come in and sort of prove to be that guy quickly over the summer and in fall camp, I think that might be his best bet to playing immediately. And I still think, you know, depending on how good he is in that role, if he were to be in that spot, could still look at him defensively later in his career, which might seem a little bit strange. And then even, you know, that might be his best bet to play NFL football.
Vogues, to wrap, the yearbook is out. It's on newsstands. It's in mailboxes. If folks are contemplating getting it and subscribing to Hail Varsity Magazine and Hail Varsity, the premium content with HailVarsity.com, tell them why it'd be a great idea for 2018 to do it.
We only get one first frost season. So that's the reason. The more I look at the cover, the more I really love it. Illustration by Mario Zika, who's a super talented illustrator. I think it kind of captures the feeling of this spring and summer in Nebraska. But you know, I'm really proud of kind of the work that we were able to do this year. We carry over certain things year to year. We try to make things different and interesting. And I think we did that to a degree. So portrait photography, you'll see, is totally different. Historically, you know, Mike's got a great feature on the O-line, and there's also this kind of dual timeline of Frost's rise and Nebraska's, well, not rise over the past 20 years, and how it kind of led to an intersection point between those two. So not only is it good to grab and take with you on your 4th of July vacation to read, I like to think these things hang around and are still valuable to somebody 10 or 15 years down the road.
I love it. Can't wait to get a copy. And get yours today. HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Vogues, we'll talk to you next week, bud. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
There he is. Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. A quick reminder, no time like right now to get on down to Sauter Heyman. Birthdays, anniversaries. It's time to get that special someone a pure-grown diamond. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. They're eco-friendly. They're sustainable. They're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. All the beauty. And they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Go see why they're some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. Nebraska's exclusive dealer when it comes to pure-grown diamonds is Sauter Heyman. Locations for you. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion in Lincoln or out west in Grand Island. Log on today. SauterHeyman.com. He's been everywhere this week. College World Series, talking with Coach Chenander, and just doing his thing. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, follows the Steel Horse. He's next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7 1/2 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Colton Stone, the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp. Sharpie, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. What are we, 9 Saturdays away from the start of the college football season?
You're making me smile, man. Just 9 Saturdays away. You want summer, but you want football to get here. It's an arm wrestling match. Sharpie, incredible work this week, man, on the College World Series. And I want to start there because I know your history with Nebraska baseball. I know your relationship with Coach Van Horn. And spend a second or two on what he's going through, in your opinion, after Arkansas was so close.
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words. That's a long 2 weeks. You know what? It's interesting with Dave, and you're right. I've known Dave for a long time, and Mark and I talked about Dave last week. And at the end of Thursday night after they lost, and the way that they lost with the pop-up, mm-hmm. which is kind of like, you know, moments that we all have in our sports history of being so close, you know, you think, okay, what do you say to someone? And I thought Dave was very, very classy on how he handled everything, that it wasn't about him. He'll have more opportunities to get back to Omaha and win a national championship, but it's more about the kids, and especially the players that are done at Arkansas, how he feels for them. And it's something that's going to haunt him for a long time, and it was something that consumed him in Game 3, where you ran into a really good pitcher from Oregon State who gave you no breathing room. And you thought, okay, it's going to happen now. It's going to happen now. We're going to get the breakthrough inning, and you couldn't do it. And it's something that'll stick for a long time. I imagine that he will think about that until maybe next season. But he'll be back here, and then eventually he'll win a national championship. He's just too good of a coach, and it's too good of a program. There's too many resources. They're in a great conference. That they'll be back. But that was a tough one. I mean, that's just a tough thing because – it wasn't like it was a difficult play. It was a very catchable pop-up that you were that away from the College World Series. And I think when 2018 is put to bed in college baseball, and especially in Omaha, you'll remember the College World Series for the weather. You'll remember that there was a Major League Baseball game announced. And then you will remember that Arkansas was one strike, one pop-up in foul territory that landed between three Razorbacks away from winning a national title.
You know, and did Dave seem resigned to the fact that, like, that's to me, that's just dumb luck. You know what I mean? That's just not. It's just an unfortunate. That doesn't speak to his off-season conditioning program or his philosophy or his coach. You know what I mean? It's just random, and bleep happens. Is that sort of how he took it?
Yeah, a little bit. And there's nothing you can do. I mean, what's he going to do in the dugout? You're right. If it's something that you can control as a coach, I think you are, hey, that's on me. But something like that, which you practice over and over, and guys have made that play numerous times in their career, I mean, it lands and you're like, okay. But then give credit to Oregon State, Caden Greiner at the plate, three pitches later doesn't, you know, until he ties it. And then Oregon State had a guy on the mound that I think Arkansas was just hoping, all right, we know we might have this hangover. Let's just get through a couple of innings, and then we'll get into their bullpen, and we'll be fine. And he just gave him no breathing room. So yeah, it's nothing that you don't start fall practice by working on pop-ups. You start fall practice on doing what you do, and you're like, it's baseball, I guess. And baseball is built on failure. You know, you go 3 for 10, you could be in the Hall of Fame, and we'll look at it and go, but yeah, there were 7 times you failed. No. 3 times I was successful, I can go to the Hall of Fame. So it's a sport that's built on failure and disappointment, and we'll see how Arkansas bounces back. But I think Dave will be fine. Dave will be absolutely fine. And, you know, he had a great time here. He loved being back in Omaha. People were rooting for him to win a national title. We all were. And it just came up short against an Oregon State team that, man, you lose your first game of the series and you lose the first game of the championship series, and yet you win a national title. That's pretty impressive.
Well, Abel was insane. That dude's so good. And Oregon State found a way. Gary Sharp is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, enjoyed your chat with Shenander. And what were some of your takeaways from that conversation about his personality and also about just the outlook for the defense in 2018?
Well, I think from his personality and his relationship with everybody else on the staff, and especially Scott, who he started working with when he was young. They were roommates. He's followed him to a couple of different spots. Is that this staff, truly anything you hear about this staff and their camaraderie is real. On the defensive side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball, these guys like each other as people first, and then they really, really respect each other as coaches and are all on the same page on how they get to the end game, whether it be winning games or winning championships, but most importantly, developing players on and off the field. And I think that was very genuine in our chat with him. Also, everything's a competition. It's a competition among coaches. They breed competition among players to make everybody better, that every day you're competing in something, whether you're competing in the classroom, competing in the weight room, competing on the field, that's going to make you better. I also think he explained yesterday in our chat with him, and thanks for listening, what he wants his defense to do. And I don't want to compare last year's defensive coordinator with Chin, but he explained it with a way that we all could understand. And we go, okay, those are benchmarks you're looking for. I will be looking for those in 2018. I think he realizes that there's certain spots of that defense that they need to get better. They need to get more depth. It's not where they want to have. But I think it's also part of the defense which he thinks that competition and some guys that maybe people are sleeping on will come to the forefront. But first and foremost, another thing that I also liked is I asked him, I said, most people in your position would never follow Scott Frost because as a defensive coordinator, you've got to play defense with that offense that goes as fast as it does. And he said, yep, there were people saying, bro, you're committing career suicide by following Scott Frost. But he said he's following Scott because he believes in Scott, that they can get it done, and they are winning. And you will see, and I'll be very interested because this has been a problem with Nebraska defense from Bo to the recent regime, is how do you take away the football? How do you make those plays that you give the football back to the defense? Not just, hey, turn it over on three and outs or coming up big on third down. How do you make turnovers and give it right back to the offense? I think this is going to be a fascinating – that side of the football is the most important part of the 2018 to me. I think the offense is going to score points regardless of who's at quarterback. It's the defense that I wonder how quickly they can adapt. And if we can, as a fan base and a media base in 2018 – and maybe 2019, are we okay with Nebraska winning 45-35 type games for the time being? Because in the past, we really haven't been that way. We've always kind of focused on that 35 number instead of the 45 number.
And stats be damned, right? Is that the biggest thing that you think fans will have to get over?
Well, just I think
stats,
so.
And, total yards, and total plays, all that stuff?
Yes, and if it's a defense that finishes in the 50s, I think you go, okay, I'm happy with that. How'd that offense do? I think just for now, I don't know. You know, I don't. The 0-9 defense isn't walking through the door.
Right.
But I think what we're also, and don't use the word bend or break defense. I think it'll be a very opportunistic defense that'll be full of, it's either going to be big play or a big miss, and then there'll be some in between. He also said one other thing. I asked him what production looks like, and he didn't. He has some numbers that he wants to hit and in mind which stats he looks at, but he also looked at production when it comes to individual players to determine how well they're playing is how close you are to the football. And they watch that on film, that at the end of a play where either a receiver, a quarterback, running back, anybody that has the ball is tackled and the play comes to an end. In the frame, how many defensive players are around? And I think, he doesn't want to go back, but I get the feeling that last year, the little film that he's watched of 2017, he saw too many plays where there was just the one tackler or the other tackler and then maybe one other guy that would be in the frame when the play is over. He wants to see 5 to 6 to 7 guys in that frame around the ball carrier when that play comes to an end. And if that happens, he'll call that a winning play.
Gary Sharp's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharp, I want to go back to that shootout mentality and possibility. The difference has been Nebraska, when they had a similar offense to this, and I'm thinking the Martinez era, right, where they're putting up a lot of points, you'd always have a defense end up caving. There'd be a moment, there'd be a play, and then that would break them. Maybe it's a missed tackle, maybe it's a big play that's given up. There were instances where the defense would play well and the offense would score points, but the offense would be shut down eventually and the defense would cave. From a run stoppage standpoint, how much of that's been talked about? Because that's still where most make their bread and butter in the Big Ten is, can you run the football and can you stop the run? How do you feel about this style of defense holding up against that run game in the Big Ten?
I think that's a good question, because that's what you worry about. And if you look at what they were able to do at Central Florida, their run defense actually got better.
Yeah.
And what's going to be the strength of Nebraska this year is that front seven. I think that defensive line, with guys that haven't performed to where we think they are on a consistent basis, they'll light a switch underneath of them. Mm-hmm. And also, there's some young players on that defensive line that we haven't seen yet that I think this staff is pretty confident that they can get out of them. So you have the strength of your team, which you think is the front seven, with a defense which got better against the run at Central Florida, that you're going to be fine in that category. I really think at the end of the day, they got to get sacks, because if they get sacks, they get pressures on the quarterback, that'll help their defensive backfield at least grow into the game, because that's an area that is a grave concern. I shouldn't use grave. That is a major concern to this coaching staff going into 2018, just because they don't know what they have back there outside of a couple of players, and also they don't have a lot of depth. So they can help them in the front seven to take care of the back guys, and I think that's where Eric Chenander and his defensive staff, they'll try and find a way to help those guys so that they don't have to, you know, baptism by fire right at the beginning of the year. He used the word, one of the stats he really likes is sacks, and we know what last year was like. Nebraska barely sacked the quarterback.
Yeah. You know, Sam McEwen in one of his articles intimated that Eric Chenander intimated that Moses Bryant is the best athlete of the incoming class. And this guy's a walk-on. That made me go back and watch Moses Bryant film. Of course, we've watched him over the past couple of years in the Metro. And I came away, I knew he was good, but I hadn't watched him in a while. And I watched him again and was like, this dude's going to play this year, isn't he? And could be wrong, but if you had to guess now, would you say that he is a factor this year, whether that be offense or defense?
I don't know if I would use the word factor. I think he has a chance to show off in the fall camp and possibly get on the board to get on the field. I do like the fact that they determine the position. We're going to play him on defense to start. I think when Nebraska was looking
at
him,
right?
Yes. I think when Nebraska was looking at him earlier, it was, hey, is he going to play wide receiver? Is he going to play cornerback? What are we going to do with him? Now they've determined what they're going to do. He is a fantastic athlete, and he's got some room to grow physically. And I think the one thing that people probably watched him at Elkhorn South and said, oh, he doesn't have a great high football IQ. They just get him the ball in space, and he goes and makes plays. And on defense, he can just wander around and make tackles. Well, give him a lot more credit. He's got some good football IQ, and I think also he's got such a good athletic body that has a high ceiling because he can get bigger, that being in the weight room and the conditioning program will help him from that standpoint. I'm excited to see him, but he also walked into a position where there's not a lot of other people that look like Moses Bryant at that position. And if he does the things that Travis Fisher is looking for, then he can find his way onto the field. But he also might be a guy, Mark and Chris, that this new redshirt rule with freshmen, that could be something that they use for a guy like Moses Bryant. Maybe Moses Bryant in September is not ready to go. And then as the season goes along, you have some nicks in the defensive backfield, some guys have some bumps and bruises, some guys can't play. And then all of a sudden in November, this walk-on freshman named Moses Bryant, who's worked his way through the program in August, September, October, he's the kind of guy that would fit into this new redshirt rule for freshmen, where he maybe plays a little bit in November just to see if he can handle it and just to see what his impact would be moving forward in 1920 and the rest of his career.
Gary Sharps with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, we'll get you out of here with this. What's your feel right now? What are you hearing with Nick Henrich of Burke? Tremendous talent. The world wants him. I know it's the dead period. Nebraska getting a commitment last night out of Oklahoma. But Henrich is an important in-state kid. What's the latest in your opinion?
Well, he is really, really good. We all know that. I'm Captain Obvious this morning. It's three schools, in my opinion, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. I think Nebraska has done a really good job in coming from behind and establishing a relationship in about a seven-month period with him because I don't know that he was going to come to Nebraska. And now Nebraska's on the radar. He wants to get it done before Burke's season begins. They've got huge expectations to possibly win a state championship. I know a lot of people are crystal balling him to Nebraska. I still like Nebraska's chances, but there is still part of me that says Wisconsin has a loud voice in the pursuit of him. So it's going to come down. I think it's still probably a month away before he decides. Nebraska's in a good spot, but I also think Wisconsin is in a good spot, and then Minnesota is a wild card as well. I've said this to a lot of people. P.J. Fleck, who is a nonstop recruiter, who at some point will have to go from recruiter to coach on the field, loves the state of Nebraska, and he desperately wants to get a kid out of Omaha or Lincoln here in his next two recruiting classes. So they have made a major, major push on getting him. But I think it's Nebraska and Wisconsin right now. And I don't know that there's a clear favorite between those two schools.
Well, and if from a perception standpoint, not this staff's fault, but you have... you need a great front seven in the Big Ten. You need a lot of great things in the Big Ten. But to lose two kids, Omaha, Lincoln, to the team you're trying to upend in the West, perception-wise, would be devastating.
Well, yes, and you're going to see Bryson Williams from Lincoln Southeast play at Wisconsin this year because of injuries on the defensive line. Nebraska tried. It's not like they ignored Nick Henrich. So I look more if you're saying, okay, what's the impact of this new staff and recruiting in-state? I'm going to attend in the city of Omaha, which has to be recruited differently from any other city in the state. I'm going to look at the 2020 wide receiver crop up here, Betts at Bell West, Watts at Burke, to see the impact of Nebraska recruiting because they will have had a full cycle and more to recruit the 2020s than they did the 2019s. But also don't forget about Chris Hickman. I think he's more of a long shot. I wouldn't be surprised if he's an LSU guy. But if they get Nick Henrich, then that would be quite a coup for Nebraska. And that would show you how quickly Barrett Rood was able to build a relationship and Scott Frost was able to seal it.
I think Rood's been fantastic. Absolutely. Sharpie, you have a great weekend, my friend. We'll get caught up next week if it works for you. Thanks for all your great work, bud.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
Gary Sharp with us, the
I
Iron
want
Horse. Hickman's awesome. I saw Hickman with his
no
size
fan.
Guarding the tremendous guards at Lincoln East when Burke and East played this year. I mean, he is such an athlete. He's phenomenal. Hickman's great.
He looks like Noah Fant looked like in Memorial Stadium this last November.
Scoring touchdowns.
Right? Just streaking down the field with really long strides. Yeah. Nebraska could use... You know, I think Nebraska's chances get helped with him when he can watch up close what they do with people in space, because that's what he is too.
Sure.
He's a space player, deep threat.
Well, I wonder if it's going to come down to using an official between now and the end of the month to get Henrich on campus. He's a guy who has taken, you know, an unofficial right after Wisconsin. But does Nebraska use an official just to show him that...
It's a dead period, though. I don't think he can.
No, I know. I'm saying... So when's the dead period end? I know it's a... It's got a...
I want to say July 25th.
Okay. So I'm saying after the dead period ends, getting him down here on an official, just showing him that he... Look, you mean that much to us. The problem is Nebraska's official visit tally is down to one. So... Yeah. One or two.
I mean, he's 50 miles away.
No, I know.
You don't need an official with him.
I know. But it would say a lot.
Yeah.
So, do we have time to break?
We got about a minute and a half.
Okay. So. Like, total?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that means we need to...
We'll just stay here.
Yeah, we'll stay here. Krennic, what are you doing this weekend? Are you taking an official anywhere?
No. Still not being recruited. And I'm starting to think...
I don't
it might
believe
not happen
that.
For me.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. You going to go make a run to the Missouri border for some fireworks?
Yeah, that's got to happen pretty soon, doesn't it?
Yeah.
My daughter burned her thumb on a punk.
Like,
so,
recently?
I don't know, the fireworks. Yeah, I mean, not hard, not bad. Just like she touched it quickly.
Okay.
Woo! Yeah. You know, yeah. It was drama. So fireworks, I don't know. I'm not really looking forward to that.
No, I kind of like my fourth will be round of golf, sit by the pool, and go to bed.
Yeah, but you know when it sounds just like a war zone for a good.
I know. It turns
36
into
hours.
Beirut.
Yeah. Is that get off my lawn guy?
No,
Maybe it is.
I think I made a deal last night, though. We were out to dinner, and Junior wanted salmon. He likes salmon to eat. He loves it. And salmon's not cheap. He's like, you get a choice, monkey. You can have your salmon, or you can have fireworks. So I made a move that way.
Nice.
Colton, have a good weekend. Kranak, be good, brother. Thanks for the time this morning.
You as well, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you on Monday with Hail Varsity. Thanks.